And then I want you to tell me, I know you wrote it out, but I'm not good at reading. So how do you pronounce the name of
Waupika
the,
Ranch.
say it
So
one
it
more time.
Waupika.
Waupika.
Yep.
All right.
It is Waupika Ranch.
Waupika Ranch. I love it. That's awesome. All right. Yeah, that's the only question that I had to get out of the way. So let's do it.
Welcome to the Real Turf Techs podcast for the technician that wants to get real. Follow along as we talk to industry professionals and address hot topics that we all face. Along the way, we'll learn tips and tricks. I'm your host, Trent Manning. Let's have some fun. This episode of Real Turf Techs on Golf Course Industries Superintendent Radio Network is presented by Foley Company, a strong supporter of equipment technicians and golf course maintenance departments everywhere. Foley Company offers a proven solution for above and below the turf for turf professionals everywhere. To learn more about Foley Company's line of reel grinders, bed knife grinders, and the Air 2 G2 family of products, or to find a distributor, visit www.foleyco.com. Ready for play. Welcome to the Real Turf Techs Podcast, episode 107. Today we're talking to Justin Wilkerson, equipment manager at Waupika Ranch Golf Course in Piney, Wyoming. Waupika Ranch Golf Course is a sole-owned nine-hole course with nine more in the works. It also has a small 6,000-acre cattle ranch. Justin is the lone tech in the shop. He has mostly Toro equipment. Let's talk to Justin.
Welcome, Justin, to the Real Turf Techs Podcast. How you doing today?
Oh, I'm pretty good, Trent. Thanks for having me on.
No, thank you so much for being here. And it's gonna be a good time. It's gonna be fun.
I'm looking forward to it.
Tell us how you got into the turf industry.
Well, so that's kind of a roundabout story. So I went to school for automotive technology and have a degree in that. And about the time I was graduating, swore I'd never get into the automotive industry. So there was a lot of stress to it and stuff like that. And I really enjoy working on things, but I also like being able to take my time and really like address something. Like it just seemed like often when I was working on things that I didn't have time to fix a bunch of little other issues. You know, I'd tell my boss like, oh man, like this needs worked on too. And he's like, not what it's here for. Just, you know, get it out the door. Mm-hmm. And so that really wasn't my deal. So came out and went immediately into basically the only other big industry in my area, because I live in the middle of nowhere, is oil and gas. And so jumped right into the oil and gas industry, did that for a couple of years, very randomly, and it's a story I won't get into, was invited to start my own financial practice, working through New York Life, doing life insurance and financial advising. I was young and I was like, I'm going to jump in and do it. Mm-hmm. Did it for a little under 2 years and decided that wasn't the road. Got into the power sports industry, working for a Polaris dealership. That was kind of my getting back into working on everything from lawn mowers to side-by-sides, four-wheelers, randomly some boats, that kind of stuff. But that's kind of really, even though I had the skills and all that, that was really where I genuinely cut my teeth in mechanicking again. Mm-hmm. And I really got like a grasp on that I do have the skills and stuff like that. Anyway, you know, all good things must come to an end. And I just really, it wasn't a long-term job that was going to work out for me. You know, I worked with a bunch of really great guys and it was, that part was awesome, but it was, I couldn't stay there long-term. And, actually my mom, she was like, hey, like, a friend of ours, he's the ranch manager out this ranch. She's like, they're looking for a golf equipment manager. And she's like, you should apply for it. I was like, I know nothing about golf, so absolutely mm-hmm. not. And I said, no. Fast forward like 2 weeks after that, some friends of mine, when my wife was working at the time, they were good friends of mine. They all were engineers for projects out there. And they're like, oh, like you got to work out at this ranch, man. Like this was like the place to be. And I was like, oh, I don't know if it's really for me. And they're like, well, just like look into it. And so I talked to the ranch manager out there who has nothing to do with the golf course at all. And I just talked to him. I was like, do you think I'm even qualified for this? And he's just like, well, you work here at this power sports place. He's like, you're a pretty smart kid, I guess. He's like, you'll figure it out. So he gave me the number to the superintendent out at our course, and I called him and told him who I was and kind of what I was doing and what I was thinking. And he was like, well, I really want you to apply. Will you at least submit a resume? So I was like, yeah, for sure. So I guess fast forward a little bit, interviewed well enough that they took me on and kind of just been running ever since. So a little different than a lot of the guys that I listen to or the ladies on this podcast, you know, just, I kind of just got tossed into the deep end and been loving it. So it's been a really good fit overall for myself and my family, and I really enjoy it. So that's, I guess, the shorter version of how I got into
the industry. Yeah, no, that's so good. I mean, I love it. And I remember one guest, I can't think of his name, I apologize, but his grandmother is the one that got him working as a mechanic on a golf course. Yep. So, I mean, and this time it's your mom. I just, you know, I love those stories. And this is definitely my favorite question throughout the podcast. And we have changed questions over the years, but this one's always going to be number one because I love hearing everybody's story because everybody has a unique story on how they got here.
Right.
And it's not like any other career path where when you were a little kid, you said, oh, I'm going to be a golf course equipment manager. Or even in high school, you said, I'm going to be a golf course equipment manager because nobody knows this job exists.
I was going to say, none of us even knew. I was like, I don't even know what that means.
Right. Yeah.
You know, when they say that, and fits really well. So,
yeah. No, that's awesome. So, to back up a little bit, what were you doing in the oil gas industry?
I started at the bottom. You know, I ran out of college and had a degree. So I was kind of the coveted jobs in my area is to be like a lease operator. Cause you know, you go on the drilling side and make lots of money cause the overtime is insane, but it's not as secure. You're not home every night, you know, that all that changes. Mm-hmm. So kind of the coveted jobs was pumping. So that's what I applied for. Absolutely nobody was hiring when I came out of college. I applied for probably 35, 40 jobs and that were open, but I guess they were hiring, but not looking for somebody like me. So started at the very bottom in what's called a roustabout, which is more or less a grunt. We do all the physical labor, all the construction stuff that's out there. Started out there, was that job for only like 3 months before I got a phone call from another job application I'd put in. And they're like, hey, like we want you to be a contract lease operator, which we call them pumpers. And so I was like, oh, this is great. Well, switched over to them. Turns out I was just another glorified roustabout, but it was for way more money. So I was like, all right, cool. And then did that for, oh, it's funny. So I don't want to get too off into the weeds here, but
no, that's all good.
I had just flown out to meet my wife's, well, my now wife, her parents, to meet them for the first time so I could ask her father to marry her. And I shot a phone call while I was there before I'd even asked him the question that I got laid off from my job. And he's just like, hey, they're cutting back. So your job's done. And I was like, okay. He's like, I got to go. I'll call you back. And then just hangs up on me. And I'm just like, this is like 20 minutes before I've got to talk to her dad or something like that. And I'm just like, all right, now what? And thankfully he called me back like 10 minutes later. He's like, so anyway, like I was telling you, laid off, but he's like, but you still work for us. I'm going to put you with another company and you are going to pump for them. And I was like, you get us started with that instead of just like freaking me out, freaking my girlfriend out, you know, just like, cause all of a sudden you're just like, well, there goes, you know, how are you supposed to go to her dad and be like, well, I could have provided, but now I can't. Anyway, switched over, was pumping for them as a contractor, ultimately had, so this is over the course of less than a year that I was four different jobs, but finally a company called me that's out here, one of the bigger companies, made me a full company lease operator, worked for them for a few years, you know, and of course you take those jobs because it's full company benefits, you know, 401k full. Just benefits in general, you know, it's way better. And we work 8 days on, 6 days off. You're home every night, generally speaking, by 5, which is super nice. You know, you get called out and stuff, but anyway, that's kind of what I did. So in lease operator, we basically just optimize wells, do a lot of computer time. And then you're running around in the field, physically just running wells when they stop and stuff, just trying to get them running again. So Okay. So yeah, and basically everything out here is mostly natural gas. Oil is a byproduct of what they do out there, but that's kind of where I started. So yeah, that was my introduction to a career, was working out there. So
no, that's cool. That's a good story. What is your least favorite part of the job? And is that sand or not?
So sand hasn't been too bad for me. This season, I've been extremely blessed. Well, I don't know if it's a blessing or not, but we, based on the kind of unique situation that we're at in our golf course of only having one owner, and we try to, you know, help him out and do work around him, because when he's there, he wants to just play good golf. So it's hard to just tear things up. So this year, fortunately, unfortunately, I'm not sure which, you know, from an agronomical point of view, not so good. But for me, I didn't have to spin reels as much. So, I mean, sand has taught me a lot about the reels and the geometry and the cutting and all that, because I've had to get real familiar with them. So I can't say that's necessarily my least favorite, but I can't really say that I have a least favorite part of the job out there. It's been a great job. I mean, if I had to pick something, maybe it would be the drive back and forth. You know, I don't love driving 24 miles both ways, but it's not.
Yeah.
It's beautiful where I live. So, oh, well, you know, it's fine.
Yeah.
So,
you know, how bad is it in the wintertime with all the snow getting there?
It can get rough. So my first two winters out here, we had basically like what we would call a non-winter, you know, maybe the whole winter, 6 to 8 inches, maybe a foot of snow on the golf course, which is super uncommon for out here. As far as like, where the golf course is compared to where I live is a little different, but like even in town, we're getting like 2 feet or less, which is pretty low. But this last winter, we had what we would consider a normal winter, which means we got absolutely just gobsmacked with snow. I mean, we got buried. I mean, the course was at pretty much any given time, 2 to 3 feet under. And then like in town was 3 to 4 feet, just blizzards all the time. And it's Wyoming, so the wind blows constantly. Like it's every day it blows. And so, you know, the drifting and all that. I mean, I got stuck. Well, actually, I got stuck overnight. I don't know if you remember this. We kind of talked about this. I don't remember. We were talking about something else. And I'm like, well, I'm actually stuck at work and spent the night at work because it got so deep. And it was just so much of a whiteout. I called my wife. I'm like, I can try to make it home, but chances are either I'm sleeping here or I'm sleeping in my car halfway in between, because I couldn't see a darn thing. So, but yeah, the winters can get interesting out here for sure. And it seems like it lasts forever. I mean, today I drove out there, it was 0 degrees. So, I mean, it's here. Wow. We're rolling into it. It snowed last week, just, I don't know, an inch, maybe inch and a half. And most of that's starting to come off right now. But I mean, winter basically starts now and typically is done by middle of April. But like this last year, we were a month behind getting started because the snow did not come off until May. So late May. Mm-hmm. So we didn't even get started on the course. So it was kind of it was different for me, but
anyway. No, very, very cool. I definitely got a plan, another trip out that way and come visit.
Yeah, for sure.
I would love it.
Always welcome.
I've spent a week in Yellowstone with my dad and my sister, and most beautiful thing I ever seen, I think. It's just beautiful there.
Did you come in the Wyoming side, or did you come in through Montana and on down?
Wyoming side. So we flew into Jackson Hole, and we did the Tetons on the first day going up through the South Gate.
So you actually were really close to me then, because Jackson Hole is the next town up from us. So it's about an hour and 20 minutes north of us. So,
Okay.
Yeah, so
we were close then. Dang.
And I'm in Jackson every week. So every Sunday I go to church in Jackson. So,
oh, that's cool. Super cool.
Yeah. So,
yeah, I wish I would have known that, because I think I was in Jackson on a Sunday.
Yeah. All good, man.
Anyway, next time. Next time. Sir. So, how hard was it for you to learn cutting units, reels, bed knives, that?
Honestly, there's definitely a bit of a curve for me for sure, because it's nothing I'd ever seen. I think when they hired me, they walked me into the, you know, kind of the equipment storage area, and they're like, you know, how much of this equipment have you seen, you know, worked on? And I like looked over in the corner where the weed whackers and the push mowers were. I'm like, pretty good at those, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, fortunately through college, I was able to take extra classes. The school I went to was the first in Wyoming and actually one of the first in the nation to offer alternative fuels. So I ended up learning a lot of like hybrid electric stuff and diesel and biodiesel, natural gas, that kind of stuff. So anyway, that's kind of a roundabout way of saying it, but like it taught, so like learning that was all right. But then the cutting unit, thankfully the guy who was there before me, he set him up really well. Like he wasn't there. I didn't get any training whatsoever from the previous guy, but he set him up really well. So when I just had to look at him, I was like, okay, this is how it's supposed to be. And then it just kind of went from there. I mean, grinding was a pretty big curve. I stuck my first reel in there and started grinding it up. And just, we have, I can't remember the model. It's one of the newer Foleys. With all automated and stuff. And stuck it in and immediately like made a pass and a half and stuck the grinding wheel, like just stopped the whole machine. And I was like, that can't be good. And you know, my boss, my superintendent, he knew something about it, but it had been several years since he'd done anything with it. So he's like, here's kind of the basics. He's like, but I don't really remember. So you're just going to have to kind of figure it out. And, it was kind of just a learning curve, trial and error. I kind of feel dumb using the gauge that they have on there, that digital gauge for setting everything center. It took me like way longer than I'd care to admit, like 9 months or something before I realized that I don't have to center it exactly center of the spindle every time, that as long as it's set in the same spot, then it just works. And I was like, oh, that makes total sense. But there was an adjustment screw that was completely loose on it. So I didn't know that it could sit in a stiff spot. So I'm like trying to hold the stupid thing at like the center of the reel and get everything centered up. And it was kind of it was complete and total learning curve. Threw me for a loop. But now, you know, once I got into the groove of it and everything cut fine my first season, even after dealing with all of that, which surprised me. But then that fall and winter, I really dove into it because when I came on was January before the season. So I only had a few months to kind of get a little bit of, you know, I was watching videos from GCSA and watching whatever I could. And then from there, we would try to get into the shop as much as I could, but just trying to get familiar with equipment. So my first season, honestly, was a like straight honeymoon period. It was a little like nice. Like I was like 50% in the shop, 50% out in the field, like doing this and that and just absorbing all this information from my superintendent and the assistant. And it's not that way now, which is good. You know, that's just the name of the job, but like,
oh yeah,
that was really easy on me. But that for the, so going back to the cutting units though, I mean, the pie tape obviously made a huge difference, but what surprised me is that I had learned enough that when I did get out to the pie tape, that that grinder is just so good and kind of dummy proof once you learn it. It has me within 1/1000th every time. So that's phenomenal. You know,
it really surprises
me, but you know, it's a good thing that it's that grinder. Cause if it was probably an old school grinder, I'd be like serious cone and everything. Anyway.
Yeah. No, I mean that grinder does make it harder to cone a reel. I would definitely would agree with that, but I'm a huge fan of the pie tape too. And just, you know, keeping up with reel diameters and where I'm at from cutting unit to cutting unit and all those things. And hopefully this will make you feel better. I've been doing this in the shop since 1997, and I'm still learning reel technology and nothing has changed.
Yeah.
They hadn't changed a single thing really over the years. Right. And, you know, I'm still learning and figuring out my process. And, when you get into different grass, you know, you got different cutting unit setups.
Right.
And just, you know, figuring all that stuff out. But I think that's part of what makes the job so fun and interesting is it's a challenge. And we're not just doing the same old thing every single day.
Well, and not to say I've got it on lock by any means, but I've got it enough that I'm like, well, we're not leaving weird lines in the grass and it looks good. So that's, as I continue to learn, that's what I'm trying to accomplish, I guess. So,
For sure. Well, and to back up to the beginning there, why did you kind of get out of automotive or decide that wasn't the route you wanted to go?
So I'm a pretty my personality, you'd say, is I come off as a laid back person, but I can stress out super easily. And there's just a lot of, even though I worked for good guys and good shops, there's just a lot of, you know, the book says you have 8 hours to put this together. You have six because we got to make more money on this type deal. And it's always rusted and just like mangled and destroyed when you're taking it apart, you know, before you even get in there. And then you're trying to put it back together. And I can't say I had great mentors in the automotive industry who would come alongside and teach me better ways to do it. I got tossed in the deep end right away before I'd taken one semester of classes, and my head of our program had set up for me to intern with a local shop here. And somehow it got crossed that the owner knew I was coming in as an intern, but the head mechanic of the shop thought I was his new mechanic. So like I'd taken one semester, I knew basically nothing about anything mechanical. And he was like, well, he's like, you did this and you did that. And like, why isn't this right? I'm like, I've never seen this stuff before. I'm like, it's a miracle I didn't have bolts left over at the end, you know, type thing. Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, I was just a kid, you know, I'm 19 and just trying to figure it out. And I'm just like, I don't know, like no clue what I'm doing. And the only classes I think I'd taken at that point, because I came in at the wrong cycle of the semesters. So I'd taken electrical and automatic transmissions first. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, those are the things I know. Like, I know nothing about like anything else. My only experience. So I wasn't raised doing mechanical work or anything like that. You know, I drove my dad nuts because I'd grab his tools and tear apart everything, could put nothing back together as a kid. Mm-hmm. But other than that, it wasn't until I got into high school. There's a guy, his name's Ralph, still a great friend of mine. He's retired now, but he pulled me kind of under his wing, is like, come work for me. And so my introduction was changing oil for a rental company of doing like equipment. So anything from like generators and lawnmowers up through excavators and that kind of stuff. Like I changed the oil and stuff on it. And then right before I left, he was having me tear down those like single cylinder Honda engines and rebuilding them. So that was kind of an intro to it, but you know, he'd walk me through every step and double check everything. And those things are pretty simple. So that was like my intro. And then I went to school, actually started as an engineer, hated that and decided, being a product of a kid coming out of the 2008 bust, you know, you wanted a job that was going to be recession proof. And I'm like, what's something I don't know anything about, but that I really want to learn, and what's going to be able to provide for myself and or future family if the economy tanks. And so that's kind of, I guess I'm more of a practical guy in that sense, that that's how my brain works, is default to just provide. So,
right. No, that makes sense. No, so, I love it. Good stuff. What's your favorite tool?
So honestly, I have a Gerber multi-tool that is my favorite because it's when I grab 10, 15, 20 times a day. You know, it's not really what I use in the shop doing repairs and stuff, but when you're out in the field or you're doing maintenance on a building, or, you know, you're just doing whatever, it's the tool that's on you right there. And it makes it simple and fast to get it back to the shop or whatever you need, just to do it that way. Other than that, I mean, a lot of guys say their phone. I would agree with that, because being out in the middle of nowhere, it keeps me connected to like you guys, the WhatsApp. The WhatsApp group is seriously the best tool invented for this industry, period. You know,
I love it.
It's true, because I went from feeling like I was totally drowning to like, well, now I'm still drowning, but at least I've got Null to help me out. Going from, you know, feeling like this is a lot to like, okay, it's still a lot, but there's guys who are more than willing to help and like that. Yeah. So that is by far the best tool, but a physical tool, I'm going to say my multi-tool. So
I love it, man. Yeah. And I did not bribe Justin to say that. I mean, no, WhatsApp is awesome. And yeah, I say it all the time, and I guess I don't have enough credibility since I helped start that. But, I mean, everybody I've interviewed and it comes up says how great it is. And I agree. I mean, it's one of the greatest resources that you could have as a golf course technician, because everybody just wants to help.
It truly is. So
yeah,
been a huge help.
What do you do to relax or find your balance?
Well, so I have two little kids, so I don't know what that means at this point in stage of my life. Relax and balance is like, I don't. So, and that's okay. Yeah. You know, it's a phase of life and that's all right. You know, it used to be like hunting and shooting and those kinds of things. Working this job currently, I haven't worked it out. I haven't settled into it enough. You know, I just finished up my third season with figuring out like how do I balance this with going out hunting and like that kind of stuff, because the season runs right into the middle of hunting season. So the golf season runs through the hunting season. So, you know, and it's your job. So you want to be a good employee. You want to provide a good product to your employers. And at the same time, you want to get out and shoot an elk, you know, or a deer or whatever. So, And I also, random aside, I also own a side company that I work as well. And so, yeah, the relaxing thing doesn't really happen, but it's all good, you know. We're just trucking through life right now, providing, take care of the family. So that's just part of it. So,
well, it sounds like maybe that 24-mile commute is the only time you could relax.
Well, that's true. So, if I could sleep during that commute, that would be phenomenal. But nobody's taking me up on driving for me to get me out there. So, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. What's been one of your biggest challenges?
So I would say I'm my biggest challenge, because I'm one of those people who has a hard time believing that I've had enough time, enough experience, whatever. I don't know if you've heard the term imposter syndrome before, but you feel like it's like any given moment, somebody's going to be like, oh, it turns out he's not actually a technician. He's not actually a mechanic. He doesn't have any of his experience. Like, and I, even though I've proven that to myself over and over and over again, like I've been doing, you know, I've been twisting wrenches and doing this. I mean, I've been out of college for 10 years now. So I would say I'm my biggest hurdle in that sense, but there's often times where I pick something like, oh yeah, I guess I do know what I'm doing. You know, it's all the time, you know, no matter what pops up, you're like, well, I've got to fix it. So you break it down, you go through the process, you fix it, and you're like, okay, well, I guess I do know what I'm doing. Other than that, I'd say my biggest challenge is I know very little about the actual golf industry. You know, I didn't come up breaking bunkers and then go under the top. I mean, even though I understand all that now, I didn't play golf at all. I think I played twice in my life before I took this job. And so I don't know what like a standard is of a golf course. I don't know like just what's normal practices in a shop for the golf industry and stuff like that. Like things that I'm like, oh, this is how I do it. I'm sure somebody would walk into my shop and go, well, I guess that's one way to do it. That's not normal. But I have physically met, well, I guess I did go to Toro University. So I did get to meet some guys there, but actually meet another equipment manager at another golf course. I've only met one up in Jackson, and that's like the extent of what I know. And, you know, they were already shut down, so I couldn't really even see what they were doing or anything for the winter. So I would say that'd be my biggest challenge of what I want to provide for the owners of our place and for my bosses. You know, my new superintendent, he's been in the industry, I think he said 10 years. The previous superintendent, who's still out there with us, but no longer the superintendent, I think he's been a superintendent for like 45 or 47 years, something like that. You know, so like he knows. Okay. And me, I'm just like, I don't know. So trying to know. So anyway.
No, that's, I mean, it's all good. And we all got to start somewhere. And yeah, if time is available, definitely check out some other places, you know, if time allows.
Yeah.
And that's
it's one of my big goals more than anything. Is to be able to get out and see a few more facilities, talk to a few more guys, maybe get somebody hauled in to my shop for a few days just so they can see what I'm doing and be like, oh, we could change this or we could do this better or more efficiently. So that would be.
Well, I'm always interested in traveling. So. If you want to come out there, I would love it. So we can talk about that later for sure.
Sounds good. Yep. Show up anytime.
What's the strangest thing you've seen at work?
I haven't seen anything truly strange. I mean, I guess one thing that maybe a lot of courses don't see, I know a lot of guys in like Colorado and Montana have probably seen this, but walking out and finding a bloody flag stick that's just like covered in blood, and you're like, you're looking at it and there's moose prints everywhere, and the moose went and fought the flag stick and rubbed, you know, all their velvet off their antlers.
Oh, it's unique. That's,
Yeah. It's unique to see because it's like this flag, you know, we have white flags and they're just, now it's covered in blood and there's little pieces of velvet everywhere and the green is just destroyed, you know. So that'll be one. Mechanically, I think a kind of a cool story, maybe a plug for John Borso. John's been a lifeline to me several times. And so shout out to John. But awesome. I had a 4300D that it would, like, it would crank and start and then just keep cranking and cranking and cranking and cranking and mm-hmm. like wouldn't stop. And then finally it would just throw a code and just the whole thing would shut down. And I chased that problem high and low, back and forth. And the only thing I had come up with was, I'm like, everything's testing fine. I've tested all the wires. Like, I'm getting continuity everywhere, you know, just doing all the basic checks, doing voltage drops, all that. And finally, like, maybe it's a computer. So I called my my distributor and I'm running them through it. And they're like, yeah, it definitely sounds like a distributor. And I threw it out on the group and John tackled it. And he was like, but I got a Toro Road Tech. He's like, he's a really good guy. Let me bounce this off of him. He called me back the next morning. He's like, so the Road Tech sends pull this plug apart underneath the seat. He's like, there's, you know, I can't remember how many pins there's in. There's probably 30 plus pins in the connector. Mm-hmm. He's like, you're going to count from this side, and you're going to count this many pins. And he's like, you're going to clean that pin on both sides. And he's just like, if just for good measure, clean each pin on either side, just to make sure you got the right pin. He's like, it's going to fix your problem. And I was just like, there's no way.
Right.
Cleaned it, did it. And I'm like, how many computers and wiring harnesses did Toro replace before somebody figured out that was the issue? Because like when I cleaned it, there was like, I couldn't see any corrosion on any of my tools that I was cleaning it out with. You know, I've got a nice little electronic cleaner, terminal cleaner kit and all that. I'm pulling it out. I'm like, Maybe whatever little tinge of blue on there. I can't really tell. And I can't say I didn't have an issue since. So I did that. And about 2 weeks later, did the same thing, cleaned it again. And then I haven't had an issue since. So I don't think I got it fully properly cleaned the first time, but that was like a season and a half ago and it's been running great. That was super odd to me where I was just like, how, like I said, how many computers and wiring harnesses that somebody replaced before they figured out that was the issue, because I couldn't physically see anything and even testing it and stuff before I did all that. I was like, nothing is showing that there's corrosion in here that's causing that issue. So,
you know. Right. No, that's crazy. No, that's a really, really good one though. And I think that's the power of knowledge too. And just, you know, just like the WhatsApp group and all that, and knowing that guy that's really good on Toro that you can call. And he's seen that 10 times and he knows how to fix it. So that's great.
And that's why I said the WhatsApp group is priceless in that sense. It's amazing.
Well, do you have a mentor in the industry?
So I'm going to have to plug mainly the first superintendent that I was hired under, Chris Hart. Chris, like I said, he told me how many years he's been in the industry. It's been longer than the 46 or 47 years that I said as a superintendent, but you know, he has been, just an extremely good boss to me. You know, he hired me and I was like, I don't have a clue what I'm doing. He's like, great, let me teach you. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay. And you know, he would not claim to say he's got great mechanical experience, but he had enough that he could point out certain things that I needed to watch for and certain pieces of equipment. He's like, I've seen this wear out and this is what you need to be watching for. So that gave me like a huge, I would say, foot up versus being, you know, yes, I had to figure out most of it myself, but the things that he was able to point out really helped me out in that sense. And then he's also taught me a lot from the agronomy side of just knowing about health of grass and what we're trying to accomplish. And just that complete and total understanding has really helped me know what we're doing, what kind of product we're trying to produce. And it's just been super helpful. And then, you know, I was joking about it today with him that I asked too many questions and he's just like, well, he's like, you can ask all the questions. I might not have all the answers, but I am constantly pestering him with this question, that question, whatever. And he's always been just super happy to just teach me what I don't know. And that's been super helpful. So I'm definitely going to say, yeah, Chris. So.
Well, that's a true mentor that you don't drive them crazy with asking them questions.
Well, I'm sure I drive them crazy some days.
Well,
but.
Yeah, maybe. But he's still there and he's still providing answers. Yeah. So, no, and that's great to have that and somebody with that much experience, even if it's not a ton of mechanical experience. You know, I mean, once you've done it for that long, some of the stuff rubs off on you. And just like you're saying, he can point to this or that and say, yeah, I've seen this break and that wears and all those things.
Well, and he taught me, you know, the how to adjust the reel and stuff like that, because he's been through periods of time where he's been mechanicless, so he's had to pinch hit and make it happen. And so, you know, I don't want to undersell his mechanical skills. I would say he's fairly mechanical, but he would not. So,
it's all good.
He's been great. So,
what technician would you like to work with for a day?
Well, Trent, pack your bags, come on out. So,
all right. Well, we can make that happen. But hey, yeah, out of everybody, go hang out with John in Pennsylvania for a day.
That would be great. I mean, I don't know if I can make it work out, but, you know, my wife's family's in South Carolina, not too far from where you're at. Maybe figure out a way to get down to some of you guys that I do know are down in the Carolinas and Georgia and that kind of stuff. You know, not being super well versed in the industry and stuff, I don't know a lot of names. You know, I know people say like Skip Hines and like there's these bigger names. I'm just not familiar with those guys. Mm-hmm. But so when I first started listening to this podcast and you were asking that question, I'm like, I'd dig anybody at this point, you know.
Somebody
have to teach me something. But, you know, as I've gotten to know some more people in the group and stuff like that, that I know are knowledgeable and would be sharing good knowledge, I would like to spend some time with some of those guys. So.
Well, yeah, let me know if you come to South Carolina and I'll call everybody I know in the Southeast and we could set up a whole shop tour.
All right. Yeah, well, I usually try to make a trek down to Atlanta at least once while I'm out there. My old professor from college, who was the head of our program, now works for Porsche North America. And so I try to make it down to see him.
I want to go with you to Porsche North America.
I'll have to see what I can do.
Because I've seen it, you know, every time I fly in or out, not every time, but sometimes we land right over the Porsche track. So I can see it, you know, on the plane as we're landing.
Like, well, man, and I guess
do that.
I guess to kind of, it goes back to the mentors in the industry. Maybe it doesn't apply directly to the golf industry, but that professor, Tracy Hind, was an incredible professor. I had him for most of my classes. You know, it was a small college, so he ran a lot of program. I had, you know, there was four or five teachers that I had, but he had him mostly. The dude is incredibly knowledgeable, an incredibly good teacher. You know, he took me aside, did things specifically for me to help me in the program that teachers don't have to do, that really set me up for success. And anyway, just a great guy. So
no, that's awesome.
Yeah, if he ever listens to this, one of my favorite people that I've ever met. So,
well, after we publish this episode, you'll have to send him the link.
I'll have to do that.
I'm sure he would love to hear this. What do you know now you wish you'd known on day one?
Everything, man. not knowing anything, like, man, there's so much to know now. A lot of it's just relax and breathe, you know. Yeah, you've never seen it before, but rely on your skills, you know. As they say, we don't rise to the level of our expectations. We fall to the level of our training, and that is very true. And so just rely on that. You do know this stuff. Start at the basics, work your way up.
So. No, awesome advice.
Get ready for tips and tricks.
Let's do some tips and tricks. What's some of your favorite tips and tricks that you use or you've seen?
I would say the only one that I know that hasn't really been mentioned before, at least I've listened. I think I've got two more of the newest podcasts that I haven't listened to yet. So maybe somebody already said it, but something that I've implemented in the last year is using fluorescent dye in my oils to detect my leaks. Mm-hmm. And that has been a massive help to me for just the tiniest pin leaks and stuff. And then what I've been trying to do is coordinate different colors with different oils. So my hydraulic oils are going to be one fluorescent color. You know, I don't really use it for motor oil, but brake fluids and coolant and stuff like that, I try to keep a different color for them. So that way when I throw it up on the lift, I can just throw the lights off, grab my UV light, shine it on there, and boom, there's a leak right there. Take care of it, you know. And just, it's nice because I try to do that every few weeks, if I've got a piece of equipment, I just try to turn off the lights real quick, check it over super fast, because it's nice when you're like, oh, there's a little hairline, you know, crack right here that I need to take care of, and it hasn't destroyed any grass and it hasn't burned up anything. You know, those are when you want to catch those mistakes, not when, oh, there's a nice, you know, hydraulic explosion on fairway one and you're like, great, you know, it's always a good
idea. That is awesome. That's a really, really good idea. And so, I know like Toro, they put in the dye and the hydraulic fluid, and that does help see it. But like you're saying, if it's UV dye and you just flip the lights off and shine around.
One thing that we've talked about implementing, I haven't decided if it'll work or not, is on my lift. I want to put the UV floodlights at the bottom of the lift. So that way when I just lift it up, it's just already shining. Like I'm not running around with a pen light trying to find it. It's just everything's just illuminated. And
That seems like a good idea.
We might experiment with that this winter. So
awesome. Well, let's talk about a ranch. What is it like working on a ranch and a golf course?
So it's great. You know, it is a very unique situation when you get hired at a job and you're like, okay, like this is a golf course. We're trying to provide premium golf. Like they're like, this isn't a public course at all. And I don't know the difference, you know, I'm like, well, grass. Mm-hmm. At the time, when I got hired, I'm like, well, grass is grass and you're trying to grow grass in Wyoming, so good luck. But they do a phenomenal job of growing grass out here and on this course. I mean, it's from what I've seen of other courses and stuff. Yeah, they keep it pretty immaculate. It's very high level golf. And, you know, the owner of our course, he's a member at some of the highest court level courses in the nation, several of them. Mm-hmm. And he owns this place and he tells us all the time, this is great golf. And even more than from him, what's impacted me is like friends of his from up in the Jackson Hole area and stuff. If they come down and play and stuff, they're like, you know, this is better than anything we get in Jackson Hole. And I know Jackson Hole has premium courses. You know, they don't have a single public course anymore. They're all private now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I'm like, well, if we're getting those kinds of compliments, then they're doing their job and growing the grass right. And hopefully I'm doing my job and providing a good cut that gives them a good play of golf.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But when I got hired, you know, they told me, so you're the equipment manager, you're going to do all this stuff for the golf course. And then in addition, as much as we can, we try to help. So we are a fully functioning cattle ranch. You know, I'm going to screw up the numbers, but I think it depends on the time of year. We're anywhere from 500, I think, to 1,300 head that we run out on the ranch. It's 6,000 acres, 10 miles long, like a mile wide, has roughly 14, 15 miles of the Green River. If anybody's familiar with that, it's the Green River is one of the main tributaries that dumps into the Colorado River.
Okay.
And the Green River starts in the mountains just outside of my town. You know, the headwaters are 20 miles away. So it's gorgeous down there, you know, and then thankfully we haven't experienced since I've been there any cows on the course. I've done a pretty good job of keeping the cows off the course, but you know, it keeps my life interesting and different, which I love. You know, you never do, I mean, everybody says this, but you never do the same thing twice. It's just something new every day. Sometimes it's working on a tractor. Sometimes putting a starter in a truck, sometimes fixing the HVAC up in one of their cabins. And that's very similar, I'm sure, to a lot of clubs and stuff. You know, I know equipment managers, they kind of do it all. You know, we're the fix-it guys.
We wear a lot of hats.
Yep. And, but it keeps it really interesting. You know, out here we have the golf course, 9 holes. We are in process of building another 9 holes right now, which I'm super excited about. I mean, the first 9 is awesome, but the second 9 is implementing some cool features that I'm just like super excited. You know, I never thought I'd be like into grass or golf courses or anything like that, but like working out here, I love being out on the course and seeing it all and doing that. So super excited to see that. Like I said, we have the cattle ranch. They're working on finishing a 65,000 square foot riding arena right now, which is going to, as soon as that comes online, there'll be, you know, more tractors, more equipment. I won't have much to do with the horses. Thankfully, I'm not much of a, you know, I like horses enough, but I know very little about them. But so that's definitely not going to fall under me. But the building and all that will fall directly under me. So,
do y'all have quite a few horses on property too, or
so,
are those somewhere else?
So they own two main properties out where I live here, and they own the big ranch, and then they own a smaller ranch up on a lake that they kind of one of their private residences. So they keep mainly their horses up there, and it ranges anywhere from like 24 to 30 horses up there. And then like the ranch has a few horses. I think they have like 10 horses or something like that, but we're not sure what they're doing with the riding arena yet, whether it's going to be for personal horses or other uses. We're not entirely sure what they're doing with it, but it's a fantastic looking facility. So,
oh, I bet,
you know, that's and, awesome. They're always offering something new that they're bringing on down there. I mean, we have like a pickleball court and volleyball court and kind of a, I don't know what they call it, the kids barn, but it's got like whack-a-mole and one of those mall horses, billiards, you know, shuffleboard, that kind of thing, you know? So it's just a cool place to hang out. You know, they originally bought the property cause they love fishing and, built like a fishing, we call it the fishing village, built multiple cabins that are right there on the river. I mean, that's actually an interesting part of the job is in the spring when we get the runoff, because we're so close to the mountains, right at the headwaters, we haven't had a full blown flood since I've been here. They did have one, 2017, when they were kind of buttoning up building the course initially.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the fairways were underwater and stuff. They had to change some things around the cabins. I think I was talking to the engineers who designed all the water flow and stuff to prevent the cabins from flooding. At one point they were like 2 feet from the river, you know, they're normally like 20 yard from the, mm-hmm. from the river, 15 to 20 yards, we'll say. But anyway, yeah, so that makes an interesting dynamic where like this, and like this year it was getting deep, and we're like, if this gets any deeper, like we're breaking out the flood bladders, we're, you know, getting sandbags together, we're ready to redirect an entire river.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, like I said, it's always something different. It keeps things fresh, keeps them, that's what makes it enjoyable. There's not a whole lot of monotony to the job, so, you know, winter does slow down, but it's also for a lot of guys who are, you know, in the climate that I'm in, it's our time to really break everything down and really go through everything. The things that you've gotten kind of lived through for the last month that broke like a month ago, and you're like, okay, we can get it done, get through the season, but we need to really tear this thing down and really rebuild everything, you know?
So. Yeah. It's perfect.
Yep.
Yeah. There's plenty of off seasons for us in the South that I wish we had the time to do all those things.
Yeah.
That a lot of the people in the northern climates do have the opportunity to do. You ready to do some rapid fire?
Yes, sir.
Let's do it. What's your favorite movie?
So I love Ford versus Ferrari. I don't know if you've seen that one.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I have. Yes. Yeah.
I love that movie. So
big fan. Awesome. I love it. Well, racing. Mm-hmm. What would be your last meal?
Smoked elk medallions, the backstrap, and wrap them up in some bacon, some large cut steak fries, and asparagus would be probably what I'd
do. I'm with you. Let me know. I'll be there. What are you most proud of besides your family, your wife, and your two kids? Is it boy and girl?
Yep, I got a boy and a girl. So
boy and a girl. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Nothing like family. So right. I don't want to downplay the being proud of your family.
Right.
But
I don't know. It is a hard question for me, not to be like all humble or like, oh, I'm not proud of things. Like I'm definitely proud of things, but you know, I think this is probably not a traditional answer and I'm not trying to skirt and get back to the family thing anyway, but you know, my wife and I decided to make a bunch of sacrifices so that she could stay home with the kids. And we decided that was most important to us. So I would say, between doing this job and working my second job, being able to just provide that so that way we can raise our kids to be the way they are. And like I said, not most proud of my family. Like I said, not trying to
hijack the question,
but just I am proud that we're making it happen. Like it's not easy, but it's totally worth it to us, you know? And I would say I'm most proud of that. So
that's awesome. No, that's really good. Really, really good. And there's nothing you can do or say down the road in the future that replaces the time you have with your kids right now.
Exactly.
When they're young, it's so important. This friend of mine told me when my kids were little, she said, they stay bigger longer than they stay little.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, if you think about it, you know, once they're an adult and they live for another however long, they are bigger longer than they're young. So enjoy those years. Tell the listeners how they could get a hold of you, Justin.
So the only way you can get a hold of me is through my email, and I'm more than happy to share that. It's jade@outlook.com.
All right. Very good.
Got too many emails, but
I understand that.
I've completely gotten off social media in the last year, and you can find me in the WhatsApp group.
Right on. Well, thank you so much, Justin, for being on. Thank everybody for listening.
Thank you, Trent. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening to the Real Turf Techs podcast. I hope you learned something today. Don't forget to subscribe. If you have any topics you would like to discuss or you'd like to be a guest, find us on Twitter @RealTurfTechs. See you bye.